the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Well, one of the last bastions of security has been something called a defined benefit pension plan. They've pretty much gone by the wayside in the corporate world, but they're still very prominent when it comes to government. But could these programs be coming under pressure in trouble? Joining me on the program is Daniel Borenstein. He's an award-winning columnist for the Bay Area News Group and editorial page editor of the East Bay Times. And Dan, let's talk about the state of pension plans. We're seeing a lot of these pension plans, whether it's California, Illinois, come under pressure now because they're not meeting their investment objectives in terms of meeting their future pension obligations. You've been following things at CalPERS. It's my understanding they're assuming somewhere in the neighborhood of 7% plus for rates of return. And Daniel, as you and I know, that hasn't always been their rate of return.
You know, it's very interesting, Jim, because my feeling about these defined benefit plans is that they're a great idea if they're responsibly managed with responsible financial forecasts. They provide income security that's really important to people. But you got to start with realistic numbers. And the question you just asked is really important. What has happened at CalPERS is they've continuously been unrealistic about their investment returns. And as a result, they are finding themselves short on money. And that's why they're so badly underfunded. The result of that then is that they have to make up that money. And so they have to turn back to the cities for even greater contributions than they would have if they'd done it right to begin with. And that's why we hear about all these cities and state government, for that matter, they're in trouble because now they're being asked to contribute a lot more to make up for the past underfunding. In CalPERS case right now, they are headed towards an investment target of 7%. That is, they're slowly ratcheting down to that level. And I believe it's next year they will finally hit it. But this is at a time when their own investment advisors say over the next 10 years, they expect to get 6.1. Well, they're going to keep digging a hole is what that means.
Yeah, because Daniel, if you take a look at one of the problems, I think, with all of this lower interest rates that has come about with quantitative easing and Fed rate cuts is it also they brought down rates of return for safe investments like treasuries, long-term bonds, which have always been a staple of pension plans. You know, I'm looking at here we are, we're roughly about 2.9%. On a 10-year treasury, if you go into the corporate world, maybe you might be able to get up to 4%. So even their assumption of getting a 6% rate of return, they may be overstating things given where we are coming to an end of almost a business and a market cycle.
Well, you raise a really interesting point, Jim, because, of course, you know, these pension plans are not looking at these days as something where they're just investing in purely secure investments like bonds. They are playing the market. They're playing in equities, they're playing in real estate, they're playing in private equities too. So what they're looking at is they think that they can get much greater returns. Of course, the problem is if you want to get greater returns, you have to take greater risk. And that becomes very problematic for a pension system like CalPERS or most of the public employee pension systems across California, where the population of the members of the pension systems is aging. And as a result, they have more and more people who are at or near retirement and fewer people who will be contributing to it. And what that means is they can afford to take less risk on investments because they have less money coming in. Unfortunately, what they're doing is, and to a certain extent, is just the opposite. To try and get these high rates of return, they're turning around and they're making riskier investments. CalPERS only finally in the last couple of years started to see that maybe that wasn't a good strategy.
So as you look at this situation, many of these pension plans have gone into the stock market, which has helped bolster the returns, especially when you see a year like 2017. But we also know, Daniel, that, you know, as the Fed raises interest rates, we're going through a rate raising cycle. The ultimate outcome, they usually raise it far enough until you either crash the economy or the markets. With these pension funds now being over 50% exposed, Will they be nimble enough to move the vast amounts of money that they manage? In CalPERS, it's several hundred billion dollars, and protect themselves in a market downturn. In 2000, the market lost 50%, and in the downturn of 2007, it lost close to 60%.
Well, let's look at what happened in 2007, the Great Recession, and what happened to CalPERS. The only thing that saved CalPERS was that at the time that they went into the recession, they were fully funded. They had 100% of the assets they should have had on hand at that time. Within 2 years, they went from 100% funded to 60% funded. Many pension folks feel that if a pension plan starts slipping below 50%, and the exact number is a matter of great debate, but if they start slipping below 50%, they're in deep trouble. Because remember, one of the things about pension plans is that they live off of their investments. Well, if you don't have enough money to invest, you can't make enough in investments. And it becomes a downward spiral with no way out over time. Fortunately, as I said, they were fully funded going into the last recession, and they've started to crawl back from that 60% mark that they hit after 2 years. So where are they today? You would think after all the run-up of the economy since the Great Recession that they'd be in good shape. Well, they're not. They're still only 70% funded, roughly, at CalPERS. If they had the same Great Recession today as they had back then, they'd be in deep, deep trouble. And what that would mean is they'd be having to turn to taxpayers, local governments in the state, for a huge infusion of cash to save the system from collapsing.
So in the past, in fact, I think it was one of the managers at CalPERS said that it might be necessary to raise taxes to keep the funding up. Daniel, how long will California taxpayers put up with increased taxation? We already have the highest tax rates in the country. Now, with the passage of this new tax law, you can no longer deduct those state taxes. So, I mean, the state of California is going to have to be very careful on what it does in taxes for fear of chasing out many of its taxpayers.
Well, I think there's clearly a limit to how much taxpayers are going to stand for this. I think they're starting to understand that what's going on right now is a squeeze out, that pension benefits are squeezing out money for other services. And they're seeing it in the forms of reduced services. They're seeing it in the forms of pleas for taxes for other types of services. They don't usually go to the voters and say, would you please give us a tax increase to pay for pensions? What they usually say is, would you go give us a tax increase to pay for fixing the streets? Because the money that would have gone to fix the streets, it turns out, is now going to pensions. The second part of that they usually don't like to discuss, but that's what's going on right now. So there is a squeeze out that's going on. And at a certain point, I think there's a real threat of a voter revolt.
Yeah, because in the past, they've put these, you know, we need to fix the streets, we need to do this. And as you and I well know, the money didn't go for those because look at the disrepair of our infrastructure. It's going to fund the pension plans. Do you think at some point, whether it's California or it begins in Illinois, they're going to go to a two-tiered system where they keep the existing system for those who are already retired, but for younger employees coming into the system, they go more to a defined contribution plan as so much of corporate America has gone to?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question, Jim. I'm not a big fan of doing away with or replacing defined benefit plans. As I said at the onset, I actually think that they're a really good idea. They provide an income security that defined contribution plans do not. And they're basically a form of risk pooling. So they're actually a really good idea if they're properly managed. That said, we are going to a two-tiered defined benefit system. We did that, as you might recall, when Governor Brown led the charge in 2012 for changes to pension contribution rates for new employees. The problem is it wasn't near enough. He reduced the pension benefits for new employees going forward, but he didn't reduce them near enough. And more importantly, he didn't make other changes. And the bigger problem is that what's really needed to fix this system financially is they have to make changes for existing employees for their future benefit accrual.
What do you think is the solution here? Because it's obvious in this kind of market, and especially this is just my own personal opinion here with the Fed raising rates and an aging business cycle, sooner or later here in the next couple of years, we're more likely to find ourselves in a recession and a bear market. So what does CalPERS or other pensions like them do?
Well, you're asking a very timely question, Jim. And the answer's a little complicated, but here's what needs to happen to save the system from either a financial collapse or huge increasing burdens on taxpayers. What needs to happen is that they have to reduce the benefit levels for existing employees for the future years of service that they provide. Let me be real clear about what I'm saying here. I'm not saying that they should reduce the benefits for the benefits employees have earned for their past years of service. What I am saying needs to happen is going forward, prospectively, for the future years the employees work, the future pension benefits that they earn have to be reduced. So, for example, when an employee, a police or firefighter in this state, earns 3% of their final salary for every year that they're on the job, which is the typical current pension benefit, it might be necessary to say for their future years of service, their benefit accrual would only be at a rate of 2% a year. The problem with that is, in California at least, right now it is generally felt you cannot legally make that change because of a series of court rulings that have stretched out over the past half century in California. And the reason, though, your question is so timely is the California State Supreme Court is about to revisit those very rulings. And these cases raise the question of whether prospectively they could change benefit levels, whether employers could change benefit levels.
Daniel, isn't one of the problems that we have gotten ourselves into this mess, excluding for a moment low interest rates, in fact, the lowest interest rates in recorded history. But wasn't there a period of time, I'm not sure which governor, but it was either the late 90s or the early 00 decade where these benefits and the percentages were increased substantially?
Yes. I think what you're asking about are the changes that started beginning in 1999 in California. What happened is that the then Governor Gray Davis and the state legislature approved increases in pension benefits, starting with public safety workers and then extending it to all workers at the state level, and then opening the door for local governments to do the same. Local governments then pretty much across the state fell into line and did the same thing because they felt or said they felt that they were under pressure to match it or fear losing employees. Here's what happened, and let's give an example, okay? We talked about this benefit rate of, say, 2% of final salary for every year on the job for public safety workers. What they did at that time is they increased it to 3%. What does that mean? It means that somebody who, say, worked 30 years on the job would have before gotten 60% of their final salary, and now they're looking at getting 90% of their final salary when they retire. The real problem with it and what they did is they not only applied those benefit increases going forward prospectively, but they did it retroactively as well. So, for example, somebody who had been working 25 years didn't just get this increase for, say, their years 25 through 30 on the job. They got it retroactively for the past 25 years they've been working as well. The problem, of course, was that contributions for those prior 25 years for those workers had been calculated assuming they'd only get 2%, and suddenly they were getting a huge windfall. Of course, many of these workers who were close to retirement saw this as a huge windfall. They suddenly saw their pension benefits increase by 50%. They, within a year or two, walked off the job and retired because, you know, they're suddenly looking at a much sweeter retirement benefit. And basically, the taxpayers were left on the hook for it.
How susceptible or willing do you think the unions will be to negotiate with the government along those lines? Because if you go back, I mean, You know, anybody that works in the corporate sector would love to retire after 20 years or 30 years with 60% of their salary. I mean, the amount of invested capital that you would need today to produce 60% of your salary would amount to millions and millions of dollars.
Depending on what your salary is. Right. That's right. How likely are unions to agree to changes? They're not going to go willingly. That's for sure. This is where the politics comes in. And frankly, I see that even if the California Supreme Court were to reverse the court rulings, which are known as the California rule that we discussed before, that's only step one. You then need to get the legislature to go along with it, which means it will be all politics. And the question will be how much influence the unions have in Sacramento. So meaningful change is still going to be far in the future, I fear. I don't think the unions are going to go willingly.
And do you think the unions are smart enough to know that you can't impose tax tyranny on the majority to fund the pensions for a minority? I mean, sooner or later, there's going to be a tax revolt, much like we had in the 70s with property taxes and the Howard Jarvis movement.
Well, I wish I saw an awakening to reasonable discussion of these issues by public sector labor unions. I really do, because I think that we are piling our children and grandchildren with huge volumes of debt. And frankly, there seems to be an indifference almost on the part of labor unions in the state to the debt we're creating. And that's really unfortunate. There seems to be more of a just looking out for the short run interest of raising their pensions and keeping their pension benefits going forward with little consideration for the long term effect on the state. It's unfortunate.
And we've seen this play out in the markets where people, when you see the market go crazy, and for example, going back to when these pension benefits were raised back in 1999, the markets were going up double digits a year. So it seemed like something that was reasonable given the rate of return of the market in the preceding 5 years. But investors kept thinking that this was the world that existed and life was going to be wonderful. And what a rude awakening they found out when it finally came to roost. And that's what this reminds me of. They're holding on. They want more benefits. They want increases. And they're not dealing with the reality in terms of what the economy can bear.
I agree with you. But to be clear, you can't just blame the unions. You've got to blame some of the elected officials at the state and local level who refuse to see this as well. You have to blame, frankly, some of the professional staff of those agencies who have buried their heads in the sand, in part because they benefit from that. And you have to blame CalPERS for that, too. I mean, look at what they're doing right now. Coming back to our earlier discussion, they're banking on 7% annual returns, even though they know for the next 10 years that they can only get 6.1%, or that their advisors are telling them the forecast is for only about 6.1% over the next 10 years. So you've got to stop and ask yourself, well, why are they doing that? How are they coming up with 7% then? Here's the answer. They are doing a forecast for the next 10 years, and then they're making extrapolations from past performance to come up with a forecast, get this, for the future half a century. And so that they then say that the average over the next 60 years will be 7%. To get there, they have to forecast that after the next 10 years, for the following 50 years, they will have annual returns in excess of 8% annually. Do you believe that?
Hell no.
Would you bank on an investment performing that way and bank your financial future on that? That's exactly what CalPERS is doing. They're banking our financial future on a forecast that is basically pie in the sky. That's irresponsible.
Well, we always see this coming from politicians. A lot of times they want to get something through or they want to get a program. And they come up with rosy forecasts that project economic levels and growth well into the future. And as you and I know, just like the seasons of nature where we have fall, summer, winter, and spring, we have those same things in the economy. So what do you think is the outcome here, Daniel? Do you think we have to get to a crisis state before politicians are finally forced into a reality check?
You would have thought that the crisis state we hit after the Great Recession would have been enough, but that wasn't. I hate to say it, but before they get to really making meaningful change, really dealing with the inherent problems of the system, it's going to have to get even worse, I'm afraid. That's pretty scary.
Well, if history teaches us anything, we're more likely to make mistakes and go through a crisis first. That seems to be the only thing that motivates politicians. Hopefully this time around, when this next downturn comes, they will learn a thing or two, and maybe they'll make the corrections that are necessary.
Jim, you know, the sad part about this, the really sad part about this is that defined benefits are an inherently good system if done right. And done wrong, it screws it up for everybody else, gives them a bad name, and makes it less likely that other public sector agencies, and certainly the private sector, are going to be willing to go down that path because they look at how irresponsibly this is managed. It doesn't have to be done like this. It can be done responsibly. And it's unfortunate that the bad actors are ruining it for everybody else.
Well, keep our fingers crossed, because eventually, whether you like it or not, reality sets in and forces you to do something you may not want to do. Listen, Dan, as we close, if our listeners would like to follow your work, how could they do so, please?
The best place to find my work is at eastbaytimes.com. Click on the editorial page up at the top, or the opinion page, and you'll see our editorials. You'll see my columns. Or you can just Google me. It's Daniel Bornstein. Bornstein.
Well, listen, Daniel, thanks so much for joining us on the program. All the best to you, sir, and hope to talk to you again in the future.
Thank you very much, Jim. Take care. Bye-bye.
Well, that concludes my interview with Daniel Bornstein, and he's bringing up an issue that is going to be, it's not just surfacing here in California. You're going to see it up in Illinois and other states as they come under mounting pressure to meet pension obligations that obviously they don't have the means to fund. And so changes are coming to the public sector in the way of pension plans. You may still have a defined benefit plan, as Daniel talked about, but maybe that defined benefit plan is going to cover less of your salary as they once did. I'm Jim Poplava. Thanks for listening.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertised with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.